Mini episode 1705 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1705. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here. And we have one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries on here today to break down Championship Sunday in the NFL. And, of course, this FDH Lounge dignitary is the proprietor of the great firstdownscouting.com. That's the number one, stdownscouting.com. My great friend, the scout Ken Bex, who I have been friends with going all the way back to the old Sports Talk Network days when I first became acquainted with him there. So an old school friendship and content partnership between us over a period of time. It is always great to talk football with the scout. And again, nobody better to talk to about Championship Sunday than this man, my good friend, the scout. Wonderful to have you back on, buddy, and we are going to have two sensational games, I think, this weekend to look forward to.
Well, first of all, it's really nice to know that you dated us in front of everybody, you know what I mean?
That's right.
But the one thing I can promise the listeners is that we're going to have a winner both in the AFC and the NFC, and I think we'll have a Super Bowl, so we can definitely look forward to that.
We can look forward to that, and again, I think that we're looking at a circumstance here with the AFC game on Sunday, the early one here, Kansas City at Baltimore. This is one where, again, it was really kind of teetering towards the very end as to how it was going to go. Was it going to be Kansas City at Baltimore, or was it going to be Buffalo at Baltimore? And again, I got that one wrong. I thought it was going to be Buffalo. Kansas City, again, getting it done on the road, they looked better in that game, especially offensively, than they've looked for a good chunk of the season. But my sort of bottom line in looking at this game here, where as of this taping here, you're getting 3.5 in this one, is that I think this game kind of comes down to, and I'm going to get into some of the numbers in a second here, but the notion of a team just flipping the switch in the playoffs, which I've never been a believer in any sport, versus a Baltimore team that's basically been there just about all year, has put up a number of dominant performances, and against really good teams at that, as they did in their first game in the playoffs in the divisional round. To me, I think it sort of comes down to that. Do you believe that a team, even a Super Bowl winner, can sleepwalk through an entire year, flip a switch in the playoffs, come out and win it, against a team that has been demonstrably better than them bell to bell the entire way through the season?
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you, I think it really came down to the Mahomes and Kelsey combination.
Yes.
And, you know, I will say this. Look, who was it for me to question Travis Kelsey, a future Hall of Famer, probably first ballot,
right.
I guess, you know, a Hall of Famer. But I will say this. Any doubts I had before about maybe his quickness or his speed or what have you, he might have been dropping off. I got to kind of put on layaway and say he's back to the old Travis Kelsey. And if that's the fact, you know, the Baltimore Ravens better be a little bit concerned because as far as I know, they took over for the combination, top combination ever with touchdowns as far as quarterback tight end situation. And that's a scary thought when you think they're not, what, they've only been together, what, 6 years?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a combination of, like I said, the Ravens better be concerned with. And one of the guys that I've been so intrigued of, and I'm surprised that they haven't been using him a little bit more often, and one of the guys that the Chiefs have that's an explosive type of guy with good size and good strength, the whole combination is Justin Watson. the wide receiver number 84. And I would love to see them utilize him a little bit more, maybe jet sweeps, all kind of little different type of formations other than Kelsey, and get him more in the mix, because I think he could definitely be a piece of the puzzle if they're going to win that game this upcoming week.
They might as well, because, again, it has struck me a good part of the year here, again. And I just think Kansas City got very complacent about their wide receiver core when they won a Super Bowl without Tyreek Hill. It has seemed to me a lot of the time it's like Rashee Rice and a bunch of winos just signed off a Skid Row, basically. You know, like, how many times can we watch the same guys dropping passes and underachieving and everything like that? So, yeah, so if you think Watson is capable of helping there, then they might as well try that. I'm going to give a brief run through on the numbers here. This is off of, again, you can check this out. It's a download right on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, the 2023-2024 FDH NFL end of regular season breakdown. So here's our comparison in various ways between Baltimore and Kansas City. In our final FDH Lounge regular season power rankings, Baltimore 1, Kansas City 6. In the SRS, a couple of these ones are statistics from football, from the great site Pro Football Reference. That's basically their power rankings. SRS, Baltimore 1, Kansas City 7. The OSRS component, so offensively, Baltimore 3, Kansas City 17. The DSRS, Baltimore 1, Kansas City 3. Some of the other statistics here. Margin of victory, Baltimore 1, Kansas City ranked 6th. Strength of schedule, Baltimore was 7th, Kansas City 24th. So a little bit of a glass jaw there in terms of competition for the Chiefs. That jumps out at me. Offensive yards per play, Baltimore 3rd, Kansas City 9th. Defensive yards per play, that is Baltimore 1 and Kansas City 4. Third down percentage offensively, Baltimore 8, Kansas City is 6. That's the one area where Kansas City is marginally better. And again, defensive third down percentage, you have Baltimore ranking 7th, Kansas City 10th. So there's a pretty decent gap in the rankings between Baltimore collectively and Kansas City when you add up all of these numbers, in part because of, again, Kansas City being 24th in strength of schedule. I mean, the lowest number that Baltimore has in any of these ones is 7th in strength of schedule and 7th in third down defense. Kansas City 17th in OSRS. If we would have said that at the beginning of the year, you would have assumed Patrick Mahomes went down and they didn't even make the playoffs. But here they are on Championship Sunday, having been carried by their defense, which is the one thing I'm pretty comfortable in saying nobody predicted coming into the season. So I'm looking at a situation here where, again, you could say Kansas City flipped the switch the previous two games. As somebody that's a Miami Dolphins enthusiast, I take no pleasure in saying this, but what they did against Miami didn't impress me at all. I expected Miami to fold. We're basically Dallas East. We don't beat anybody that's any good at this stage of the game. Miami's just not at that point yet. What Kansas City did against Buffalo impressed me a little bit more, but Buffalo has their own history of stepping on their Johnson in the postseason here. So you could look at that and say, well, maybe Baltimore has been much the same the last couple of years, but I almost look at it like the people that expect Kansas City to go in and win, it almost feels like superstition. Like they're the team that makes the Super Bowl every year or most years, and Baltimore's the team that just pisses it away. I mean, maybe that's the way it plays out in the end, but I'm a data guy at the end of the day here, and I'm looking at this, and like the gap between Baltimore and Kansas City and what they did through the 17 games of the regular season is relatively stark, Ken, as I look at it.
Well, you know, first of all, I have to say, when you were breaking down all those statistics, and especially from FDH Lounge, I had a smile on my face.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you are the statistical man with the pertinent type of stats that get down to the nitty gritty. And did you say Buffalo Bills, they're Johnson?
Yeah.
I like that one, too.
Yeah.
No, but getting back to what we were talking about, I'll tell you something. I'm favoring the Chiefs, believe it or not, and I'll tell you why.
All right.
As much as I like Lamar Jackson, I think I'm going more on a hunch than the stats.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that he shouldn't have got the MVP this year, But I have not yet seen him in a big game come through.
True.
I think the Ravens look crisp, both on offense and defense. That's one thing I will say. Out of all the teams I've seen, they look the most crisp. I don't see a lot of mistakes. And that's a good sign for things to come towards the future. But at the same time, I'm looking at the Chiefs, and when it comes to Mahomes, he just has that winning characteristic. I'm not overlooking the other things, but the one thing I do like that I was looking at, too, is Pacheco. Now, he might not be averaging 5 yards a carry, but, you know, we spoke on the phone before we got on here, and it almost goes back to what I was talking about before when it comes to the SEC running game.
Yeah.
He just knows how to get those pertinent 3 yards when you need them. You know, when it's third and two, he gets three.
He does.
You know, when it's third and one, he gets two or two and a half. When the Chiefs need it, well, you've seen it at the end of the game against the Bills. There's no reason the Bills shouldn't have won that game. But well, at the end of the day, once again, the Chiefs came out victorious.
Exactly. And by the way, if you think I dated myself before, I'm going to date us a little bit more here by saying this. Situationally, I think what you're saying, at least situationally, is that Pacheco is the Christian Okoye of today for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oof. Did you have to bring up the nightmare from the Nigerian nightmare? You know, I have forgot about him because now automatically I'm thinking about, can I pair him up with a nice fullback and run?
Yeah, exactly.
You know how my mind goes. But, that Pacheco, you know what he is? He's a guy with talent, but he's a worker.
He is.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he's the ultimate combine guy that necessarily don't have the production that you look for, but at the same time, when the game's on the line, he comes through. And those short yardages, when they throw him the outlet, they need third and eight. Why does he always come up with 8.5?
If
these guys are proven commodities. Now, granted, they don't have a lot of them. Like I said, it's pretty much Pacheco, Mahomes, and Kelsey.
Yeah,
and the rest of the guys, you know, depending on the week, they're question marks because you really, as much as I like Justin Watson, for whatever reason, he's not a big part of the game plan. So
yeah.
whether he's got the talent or not, the bottom line is he's not there a week by week basis. So more or less, I guess you would say that doesn't sound great on my part, but I would have to go by past history, recent past history, and somewhat of a hunch, and the fact that I love Lamar, I do, maybe because he's not what we call necessarily traditional, and maybe my mind hasn't, turned over to that.
Okay.
And I know he's both effective passing and running, but at the end of the day, man, that Mahomes magic, I just can't get away from it.
Yeah, listen, I understand that, and that's where, by the way, if you want to compare and contrast Pacheco overshooting the mark relative to expectations when he came into the league at running back. Again, I'm a guy that was definitely wrong on Edwards-Helaire. I really thought that guy was going to be a real stud in this system. And he's just another guy who is just really underachieved for Kansas. Most of their underachievers are at, wide receiver, but some of them are at running back. And, he's definitely one of them. He's sort of the primary one, I would say, in that regard. And,
speaking of the witness protection program, is Kadarius Toney going to play this week?
Oh, my God, yeah. Like, they just, again, you win the Super Bowl and it becomes all about reclamation projects. Like, you know, you got to get serious about this. And I listen, it's hard to second guess spending a lot of their draft capital on defense because the whole thing of like, okay, well, now that Mahomes has passed the rookie contract and the cap's getting tighter around the neck, I get it. But here's the thing. Kansas City has no choice. They got to flip it the other way in this offseason. They need wide receivers.
Yeah,
they need a tight end for the future with Kelce being there. And I'll say it again. I think Kelce is a guy at this point who I think could be in the running for, you know, another 2-3 years like this. Might be in the conversation for greatest tight end of all time. I mean, It's hard to look around and find anybody who's really kind of surpassing him as far as what he's done. And he brings the postseason component to it that a lot of them didn't. And that's where, again, a guy like Gronk, but Gronk didn't play as long as Kelce already has. And, a guy like Kellen Winslow never had the postseason component to it. A few games here and there, but nothing like what Kelsey's done over the period of his life. I will say this, and again, me and you being lifelong denizens of the North Coast, you'll chuckle appreciatively when I say this. My good friend and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary, Bob Benek, and the commissioner of my football league, low these many years, when he saw the Kelsey brothers on TV last year at the end of the Super Bowl, we always have a Super Bowl party over his place. The only comment that he made was, those guys are so Cleveland Heights.
Well, you know, when you were talking about Kelsey, I'm with you all the way with that one. Yeah. I mean, if he puts a string of two or three more years together, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, you can maybe try to clip him with his, you know, maybe not being a traditional blocker, but at the end of the day,
right,
his explosive plays, his creative, route running, improvisational type stuff, you know, right off the dime.
Yeah.
You cannot, you know, put that into, forget the blocking. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, I'm sure he's more than proficient at basic blocking. So when you start adding on that he's, well, one of a kind, pass catcher, bottom line. I mean, I've never seen nobody that has the multiple dimensional type pass catching and route running for a guy that big. And I keep saying to myself, well, don't they know he's just going to turn around? You know what I mean? But obviously there's something about him that's quicker and faster than we must see looking through the TV, because – time in and time out, he turns an 8-yarder into a 15-plus-yard type game.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, everybody knows what he's going to do, but you can't stop him. So like you said, if he can go with another streak of 2 to 3 years, I haven't seen anyone better than him.
I haven't either. And, in looking at the game here, again, I'm going to go with more of a traditional perspective on what I expect the outcome to be. By the way, my picks on the show last week, 1-3, that brings me down for the year to 141, 130, and 11 overall. So I've got to hit the last three to be above 52.4% for the season. Here's what I'm going to do, Scout. I don't consider this to be cheating, by the way. If I don't go 2-0 this week.
You know, they say before somebody says I don't consider it cheating, they're cheating.
Yeah, well, here's what I'm going to do. But if you go on record, so here's what I'm going to do. If I don't go 2-0 this week, if I end up getting boxed out, I'm just going to give a whole buttload of props for the Super Bowl. And if
there
I hit it, if I hit enough of those, hey, I went on the record. I'm still above 52.4%. I have chosen not to get into the over-unders and everything. I've given scores the last couple weeks. While I haven't considered those to be picks on the over-unders, and I don't consider these to be here, I'm just going to give out the score for the heck of it, just for fun. I'm going to say, and looking at this here, I think with the defenses involved, I think the kickers are going to be a little bit more active than you might otherwise expect. I'm going to say Baltimore 23, Kansas City 16. So the Ravens to cover to 3.5. But you're expecting Kansas City to win outright then, yes?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Okay.
No doubt about it. I'll take the points on this one.
Okay, all right. Scout takes the points there. The late game is, of course, going to be a rematch, at least in terms of the cities, of the 2012 World Series, Detroit and San Francisco. Mm. But this time it's going to be...
Another fun fact there, Rick.
Thank you, thank you. Yes, the one thing I'm a slave to is my cross-sport analogies, but this is a rematch, I believe, of... I think it was I saw a thing recently. I think it was the playoffs in 83. I think it was actually the Lions and San Francisco that year. But they meet here in the Bay Area, Santa Clara, to be technically correct here, in the late game on Sunday. Detroit getting 7 points as we speak right now, which is exactly the same as what it was with the opener. Same in the AFC, by the way. The number has not appreciatively moved. But looking at this game, the numbers are a little bit starker in terms of the breakdown between the two teams here. So on the final FDH power rankings, San Francisco was number 2 overall. Detroit was number 5. The SRS, so again, that's the Pro Football Reference version of their power rankings. They use a statistical formula. They have San Francisco 2nd and Detroit 6th. OSRS, so the offensive component of that, San Francisco 2nd and Detroit 5th. way more of a gap when you're looking at the DSRS, as you might expect. San Francisco second, Detroit 25th. In terms of margin of victory, San Francisco second. They got a lot of twos here. Detroit is eighth in that. When it comes to strength of schedule, San Francisco 12th. And well, tied for 12th because Detroit is also tied for 12th. So no difference there whatsoever. Offensive yards per play, San Francisco first, Detroit third. Pretty close there. Again, spoiler alert, when you go to the defensive side of the ball, it flips. San Francisco 7th, Detroit 24th in terms [S2] Wow. [S1] Of third down offense. San Francisco 4th, Detroit 10th. If Detroit was even a little bit better at that, there might be something exploitable here, because the one thing that's going to surprise you is third down defense. Detroit's actually way better. They're 10th, San Francisco 23rd. So this is something I've talked about before. You don't necessarily think of that as being something that is a chink in the armor with San Francisco, but it is a thing where they are susceptible to possibly screens to the running backs, and that's where Detroit might be able to cause some havoc on third down here and extend some drives. I actually think the entirety of this, and I said this last week, and this is a thing where Green Bay was, for a good part of the game, able to extend some drives. I made this point about the third down defense for San Francisco, and it was going to be key for Green Bay. It was key to them at least sticking around as long as they did. I think it's almost the entire ball game for Detroit if they can exploit that. If they can, then they can hang and maybe hope to outscore San Francisco, which is what they're going to have to do with that defense of theirs. I know they're good at getting pressure on the quarterback. And again, I know getting to Purdy is going to be, you know, a big, you know, challenge for them, but something that is achievable potentially. But I think the entire thing boils down to that. Can San Francisco be exploited on third downs? If so, I think there's a pathway for Detroit to actually make it to their first Super Bowl.
Wow, that just you saying that Detroit going to their first Super Bowl was quite I had to take that in. But you know, looking at it right now, it looks like the new kids on the block with the Lions versus the old guard, you know, with the San Francisco 49ers. And you know, I think if Detroit's going to win this game, it's going to have to be on the offensive side. There's going to have to be some explosion. So I'm looking at two of their Bama guys, from Alabama, Jameson Williams and Jahmyr Gibbs. Both [S2] Yes. [S1] Of them are explosive guys. And I think this could be, if Detroit's going to make their lane going to the Super Bowl this year, I think, believe it or not, I think Jameson Williams is going to have a big deal to have a big deal to do with it, because I really think he could be one of the top 10 guys in the league. I'm not sure that they have exploited him as much as they could have. Now, I know he was coming off suspension. Maybe that delayed some things, but I think he's got that combination where potentially he could be, you know, a multi Pro Bowl type guy, and maybe beyond that, if used properly. So I'm looking to see how San Francisco defends Jameson Williams, and depending on, you know, if him and Goff are connecting, and of course they got Sam LaPorta, the other rookie. Yeah.
Although he's banged up
right now,
he's banged up.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
My guess is he's going to go because it's the whole season on the line, but I don't know what his effectiveness is going to be, and they need him to be effective.
Yeah, I don't think they have anybody at the tight end spot that's really going to, like, you know, push the defense if he's not anywhere near where he'd be. So even more, they might have to, you know, try and go with that running game with Montgomery and, you know, with Gibbs. Now, I look at Gibbs, you know, when I evaluate him, I didn't see him as a pure running back as far as, you know, all-dimensional type guy that can do everything inside, outside, and take you all the way down the field as a pure running back. But as a talent and a playmaker, as long as you can mix him into the in the passing game, that's the best way to go with him, making him a multi-dimensional type player, put him in the slot, whatever you got to do. This is one of them kind of games you're going to have to do that if you want to get to the promised land.
Yeah.
So I'm more looking at what Detroit needs to do to beat San Francisco, because to be honest with you, once again, I'm going to lean on, past history. And, we spoke. I like Purdy. I think he's just above a system quarterback. And with the different weapons, explosive weapons they have. Now, I'm not sure about Deebo Samuels, if there was some talk whether he's going to play or
he's banged up too. Yeah.
What's the deal with him so far?
He's banged up. Similarly, I expect him to go, but it's a thing where if that guy's banged up, he may not be as effective because he needs to be strong physically to play the kind of game that he plays. So that's going to be a real challenge there. On Gibbs, it's a thing where I go back to draft night, FDH Lounge episode 153, me and you doing the live stream on draft night. Both of us, if I remember correctly, considered that to be something of a reach for Detroit. Not that you don't want a guy like Gibbs, but trade back, man. Use your draft capital. Trade back and get him. He was still going to be there. That being said, and I want to say this, it doesn't make me a hypocrite, that where I had him on my fantasy rankings this year did not reflect the fact that I thought he was a reach. Because I thought, okay, they could have gotten him in a more efficient way, but they weren't wrong that he's going to work well in their system. I knew he was going to work well in the system. And he's one of these guys, just hearing you talk about him there, Scout, I just feel like this should be like an official position in the NFL. We should just have an official position for weapon in space. Because, he's the epitome of that, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, I have a position and that I had made up a while back.
Okay, tell me about it.
Why is my head... Of course, I have the brain fart now.
You set it up. You got to tell us what it is.
I'm not just coming with this up off the top. I'm sure while I'm talking, I'll come up with it.
I hope so, after you gave that introduction.
I'm sure hoping so myself. And of course, when we get off here, I'll think about it. But it was more or less a non-traditional player or a positional player that's just more or less a space player.
Yes.
Yep. And he fits the stereotype. He's not what I would call, what I would say, a Pro Bowl at any one position, but as a, how sometimes they say the sum of the total.
Yes.
Is better than anyone, part. So I think he is the prototype guy when it comes to that position that I can't think of right now. But he is that guy that you need to get. He's a space player.
Yeah.
He operates in space. That means multi-back. That was it.
Okay, multi-back.
That's the position. So multi-back, meaning, I want to get this guy the ball in screens. I want to get him, if punt return, kick return. I want to get him some touches out the backfield. The bottom line, he's an explosive guy, and he has enough physicality where I don't think he'll, just get broken up if you were to give him 15 to 20 touches. Now, that, like I said, that does not have to be exclusively out of the backfield, but we want to get him 15 to 20 touches, period. Before that game is over.
The funny thing is about what you just said there is that you rephrased it, and you might have gotten into some nuances I didn't, but you essentially made all the points I was making.
Great minds think alike, buddy. Some of my guy, multi-back.
Yes.
You know what I mean? He's not a traditional, let's say he's not a traditional receiver.
Yes.
You know who he would be? He would almost be Cheetah.
Yeah.
With the Dolphins. He's not a traditional size receiver.
Well, and this is where...
He's so explosive, and you got to get him the ball because great things are going to happen.
Well, and I have said, previously, both on air and off air, to my friend and a great friend of the show, former NFL player Vernon Turner, that he really was sort of before his time because in the early 90s, you just didn't. He was playing at the same time as Metcalf. And remember the whole thing we remember with Belichick and Cleveland? All the revisionism about how Belichick would have eventually succeeded in Cleveland. Belichick was the coach that brought the term Metcalf up the middle into the lexicon. Okay?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Which I don't understand when you think about who Belichick was, how out the box and creative he was with like an Edelman type. You know what I mean? But then you was running Metcalf up the middle, which always had me perplexed because that's not going towards his strengths.
When you had Horde and Vardell on the roster, who presumably would be the guys that you would run up the middle, but again, that was a whole thing too.
Are you talking about Touchdown Tommy?
Touchdown Tommy, yeah, yeah. It, you know, the less said about him, the better.
Right.
Leroy Horde, I actually have fond memories of just because I remember many times back in the day. Leroy Horde is a very, very serious, I don't know if he still is, but he was at the time, very serious scratch bowler. So those all-you-could-bowl sessions up at Yorktown Lanes, he and I would frequently be up there at the same time. I remember him complimenting me on twice making the... I was bowling next to him one day, twice making the 6-7-10 split when I was bowling next to him. And actually, it was a thing where the second time I made the 6-7-10 split, I hear him exclaim to his agent who he was bowling with, "Shit, man, he did it again!" I was like...
was that like a humble name drop there, Rick?
Yes, that's one of the... That's one of my five... That's one of my five greatest moments in bowling is impressing Leroy Horde by twice making the 6-7-10 split. But you're right, it is a humble brag by mentioning my proficiency at making the 6-7-10. But
I have to say though about Leroy Horde, you know, my final thought about him was that he was a guy that wasn't overly talented, I wouldn't say, but he maximized who he was as a player.
Yeah, he was a hard worker. I have one more funny story about him. By the way, my friend and FDH Lounge dignitary Jeff Weber, who is quite an embellisher, so take this with a grain of salt because Weber is known to make things up shamelessly. But he was actually bowling in a scratch league with Leroy Horde. They were going to the old Berea Rolling Bowl. And the story as he tells it is Leroy was doing 125 going down Bagley Road, gets pulled over by a cop, given a speeding ticket. Leroy tears it up, gives it back to the cop, and says, "Send it to Belichick." So,
no way.
I mean, my whole thing is I think Weber's full of crap, but it's a funny story anyways.
we're gonna mark it down anyway.
Yes, yes. A story that great's got to be true, right? That's the old Cosmo right. Kramer line. But so
and you know, back in those days, you probably could get away with that.
You probably could, and that's probably exactly what the officer did if it actually did happen. But you know, in a game like that's a roundabout way of saying that again, Gibbs. You know, is valued a lot more 30 years later than the likes of a Metcalf was then. Because, again, they had weapons in space back then. They just didn't use them that way. Meggett, Metcalf, my guy Vernon Turner just didn't get used that way then. Gibbs, they know how to use him in Detroit. It's one of the reasons that one of these teams is going to back up the Brinks truck for Ben Johnson. He's the hot OC candidate for a head coaching job this year. God help him if he goes to Carolina and ends up working for that idiot owner. But... you know, if the guy gives him enough gold bullion and whatnot, he might be able to reel him in. But in which case, we'll never hear from Ben Johnson ever again. He'll be rich.
We'll be thinking about the track guy.
Exactly. That's what I always think of too. I'm always whenever I see him trending on Twitter, it's always like, am I next going to see Carl Lewis trending on Twitter?
and you know the controversy with Ben Johnson. I don't want to get into the details, but the bottom line, you're wondering, did his past history actually catch up to him? you know what I mean?
Well, his past history would have to run awfully fast, wouldn't it, Ken?
But the reason he was running fast.
That's
a lot
right.
Of times when you see those trending names, I'm going, oh boy.
Yeah,
is
that's
this a DOA situation.
Yeah, did we get another roids test in here on him?
Right, what, right.
Are these NFL teams going to be lining up to piss test this Ben Johnson before they hire him? You know, could be. You
Speaking
know.
Of which, the track, since we're on the track thing.
Okay.
Nehemiah. Remember, what was his name?
Oh, Ronaldo Nehemiah with the hurdles
and
stuff, right?
Yeah. He was like, I remember he was fast. He'd get open, but
yeah,
you could tell he didn't know the nuance of how to cover up, not take that hit.
Yeah, well, cover up, not take the hit, catch a football, run routes. There are actually other things than being fast. So, yeah, I mean, that's...
That's what they say, yeah.
You know, there's a reason that we don't have, you know, sumo wrestlers out of Japan getting signed as offensive linemen, right? Like, it's harder than it looks as far as doing some of these things here.
Well,
you know
if they didn't have to move, Rick, it'd be great.
I had heard, I think it was back in the 70s, maybe with Washington, I think Andre the Giant actually auditioned for them. And,
wow.
Like, his footwork when he was younger, like, dude was over in Japan throwing drop kicks and stuff when he was younger and lighter
really?
And whatever. Yeah, like, young Andre the Giant, look it up on YouTube. Yeah, like he could move. So yeah,
well,
so
that's like what was the center basketball? I'm trying to think. Remember he did track?
Can you
volleyball? What's his name? I'm blanking again. Help me out.
Track
Rick,
and volleyball. What era? What are we talking here?
Oh, 70s.
Okay.
Chamberlain.
Oh, Chamberlain. Did Chamberlain do other sports too? Okay.
Oh my goodness, he could have went for Olympics in volleyball. He did track.
I know.
As a runner, yeah. I think he was a high hurdler.
Well, I know he was doing mattress marathons, but that was another story. But
right.
So, yeah.
I like the laugh there, Rick.
Thank you.
That was worth some extra butter on the popcorn.
I think it was. It was like, and I tell you what, I always pride myself, going back to the old Sports Talk Network days, of being like the master of segues. But the last couple of minutes, I don't know how we segue to game picks for San Francisco, Detroit. So I'm just going to throw my hands in the air and just like abruptly kind of do it, because I can't think of a graceful way to get back into it here. But we've touched on that as far the last time we were actually talking about this, it was Gibbs and his ability to extend Detroit's drives. You have a situation here where I was seeing on Twitter, since we were talking about that, Chase Young, during the game Saturday night, where everybody was just like taking shots at him, like Chase Young out here doing aerobics all night, you know? So it's like you expected him to have more of an impact there, but you also expected him to have more of an impact in Washington. I'm just scratching my head on that one. But again, San Francisco, again, a deep team defensively, just especially after the moves at the trading deadline, just like they are offensively. So you're looking at a situation here again where San Francisco, very similar to Baltimore, when you're looking at the regular season numbers, pretty impeccable. And Detroit, I will say, my preseason picks, I actually had them making it to Championship Sunday. Just because, again, I expected them to step up this year, and I expected the NFC, for the most part, to be a pile of garbage, and I was right on both counts. So Detroit is in this game. I thought they'd be here against Philly, but Philly fell back into the garbage pile for reasons that everybody's still deciphering right now. So in looking at this here, again, I'm going to be consistent with what I did in the AFC. I'm a guy that just tends to kind of default to the data at the end of the day here when I see it pointing in a certain direction, and I do see it pointing in that direction here. So I'm going to say San Francisco pulls away and wins it 31-20 over Detroit, thus covering.
You know, I'm going to have to agree with you. I hate to have to agree with you, but I'm going to go with the San Francisco 49ers myself. But I do have to say, one thing I have to say during the playoffs, I have to give credit to one of the Lions. Now, and that's quarterback Jared Goff.
Yes.
You know, now look, am I saying he's a top 10 guy? No. But there's a talent when it comes to knowing your strengths and weaknesses.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
As a player. And I'm going to tell you, he plays within his means.
He does.
And I'll tell you, that's somebody that can be dangerous when you're at the quarterback position, because he is a talented guy.
Yes.
And so that's one thing I think we should definitely look at that come Sunday, is get the temperature how Jared Goff is doing, because he's really clicking.
Yes.
You know what I mean? He's doing the 1-2-3 read pretty quick, and once you get to that point, you can be a dangerous guy. And like I said, if he can start getting that combination with Jamison Williams and hitting Jahmyr Gibbs out the backfield, and hopefully LaPorta can give him a little something too, as long as his health stands up. Well, I'll tell you, man, you never know. This is the playoffs. This isn't a 7-game series, so anything can happen. At bottom line, I hope we have a good game, two games come Sunday, and the percentages say we will.
Yes, I believe that we will, although, again, I believe in probably the mid to late third quarter, I think San Francisco is going to pull away in this one.
Right.
I will say,
I just think their depth overall, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. And they're better on both sides of the ball, especially defensively. And I will say again about Jared Goff, it's very, very funny because you have two lounge dignitaries that are at opposite ends of the spectrum vis-a-vis motivations for Detroit to win the Super Bowl. Now, I'm very proud of lounge dignitary Derek Joseph, who managed to get a ticket on them to win the Super Bowl at 29-1 after they beat Kansas City week one. So he's sitting here holding a 29-1 ticket. I'm on the other end of the spectrum here because as a Jared Goff apologist from day one, I never wavered in believing that Jared Goff was an excellent pro quarterback, even when others dumped on him. FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway got me to promise at midseason. He brought it up on air, and of course I could have edited it out, but that would have been gutless. I took the challenge here. If Detroit wins the Super Bowl, I am obligated to get a tattoo on my ass of Jared Goff with the Lombardi Trophy. So,
In saying that, that could be detrimental to you, especially since I know how much you go out and with that bikini brief and go on the beach. So that could be quite detrimental, you know.
It could. It's going to scare some people the next time I rock the banana hammock, Scout. No question about it. So, you know.
Did you say the banana boat?
The banana hammock, yeah. So, you know, that is, that's going to be something that's going to be a little rough on the eyeballs if I have to get this thing done. But
well, you'll definitely probably make YouTube, no question about it. There's no question.
I said to Chris at the time.
If you're not famous now, you will be then.
Yes, I said to Chris at the time, my only solace is that it will go viral and I should get something out of it, you know, so. There is that. For as much as I'm always trying to grow the Lounge brand, I might end up doing it the hard and painful way with Jared Goff and the Lombardi Trophy on the posterior of yours truly.
Well, you know what they say, though. It's not how you get there. It's just that, this is a family show. Blank, you get there.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. And getting the thing on there, yes, that is... We're still two games away from that, but it's looming a lot larger than it was at midseason. No question about that. So
you know what my question is? How did we get from Jahmyr Gibbs to a tattoo on your banana boat? In only like 2 minutes.
Well, you know, at all points in between, as we've been, you know, at least, you know, intermittently discussing the NFC Championship game here. But I think it's one of these things where, again, Detroit in the end, and again, you wouldn't believe it. Again, I highlighted it before. 10th and third down defense, San Francisco 23rd. So it's a thing where Detroit, again, at least situationally, can play some good third down. And I'm going to guess that probably Aiden Hutchinson probably plays a big role here as far as the third down defense. I'm guessing that's a lot of sacks. I'm guessing that number is pretty sack dependent. So.
Oh, by the way, I do not mean to cut in, but I'm glad you brought up Hutchinson because he was a guy coming out of Michigan that I thought he'd be, if he's your number one D, and I thought he'd be middle of the pack in the league, but he has definitely outperformed where I projected. I have to be honest with that. And I seen him last week even, and he's legitimate. I mean, yeah. You know, that those numbers he's got, he earns, and he's definitely, to me, a top 6-5 type DN in the league.
He is, and I realize that, again, sometimes I paint with a broad brush when I talk about the Detroit defense. I'll use the polite term of not being up to snuff. But, like, boy, where would they be without him, right? Because, like, that secondary, like, you can pass on them and everything. But man, if you didn't have him up front causing the havoc. And, again, he's somebody where it's going to be sort of disproportionate. Like, the ability of him to get to Purdy and the ability of Detroit to stretch drives and take advantage of that 49er third down defense. I mean, I think it basically comes down to those things in a nutshell here. If Detroit is going to be able to prove us wrong, bring me one step closer to the ass tattoo, I think it's going to take both of those things going a certain way. But again, just looking at it, I don't expect that to be the case. Detroit has the look of a team right now, I think. You look at San Francisco, they've been about at this level the last couple of years. And again, if they were to win this year, you wouldn't say that they're ahead of their time. Detroit has a team, again, they've made the big leap up this year. And not the teams haven't done it to make the Super Bowl before, but... Again, Detroit looks like a team that still needs to consolidate, especially defensively, before they can take that next step. San Francisco just has the look of a team that win, lose, or draw in the last two games just needs to kind of tune up the roster in the offseason the way that any top contender does. So that's why I'm going with them. They look like more of a complete team. And when I say look like, I mean, they certainly are a complete team. Not even the most hardcore Lions honk would argue with us that they're more of a complete team than San Fran.
And then when you take in the fact that we didn't even bring up a guy, let me see if I can remember his name. Christian McCaffrey, I think.
CMC.
Yeah, that might kind of tilt it a little bit that way too.
Yeah.
So as long as he's healthy, that could be a problem both in the run game and the passing game. And I definitely got to give a shout out to one of my favorite guys in the entire league. I'm sure you're not looking for this, but he's known as a fullback, but he's the All-American football guy in NFL, and that's Patrick Ricard.
Okay.
Like 6'3", 300-pound fullback.
Sure.
You know my love.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was just hoping you weren't going to go back to Tommy Vardell again.
Well, he's Tommy Vardell, 4.0?
Yeah.
And any Vardell times 4.0, I can take any time of the week.
Yeah, and that's definitely a weight joke right there, 4.0. But,
remember the hungry man was a hungry Jack? He's my hungry Jack guy in the NFL.
Yeah.
How about that one?
Exactly. Well, you know, it takes all types if you're going to put together a championship team, so... This is a thing where, again, what you're looking for from the picks is a rematch of the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, Kansas City and San Francisco. To me, my prediction is this is Harbaugh Bowl 1.5, as there will only be one of them on the sidelines this time here, at least on the head coaching side of things. But whichever way it goes, again, Championship Sunday. I always say this on the show because I've been, I'm sure you've been, a lot of people out there that really love football have been at our fair share of Super Bowl parties with casuals. Well, this is the day for the hardcore fan. Like, it's not that I don't love the Super Bowl. It's always been just about my favorite sporting event, but it's like we share it with all the people out there that don't know whether the football's pumped up or stuffed, okay? But, like, Championship Sunday, it's for us. It's a doubleheader. It's the game, championship games in each conference. I revere Championship Sunday, and I always have. And, like, it's for guys like me and you out there. It's, like, the purest day on the calendar for guys like me and you, Scout, in my opinion.
And, well, you know, I was thinking, I was capping up trying to think of what I'm going to remember about this weekend the most. And if I had to pinpoint it when it comes to one player, we're going to find out. Is Lamar Jackson really ready for the spotlight?
Yes.
Because I'm going to tell you, you're not going to find a Chiefs team that's more wounded, I would say,
yeah,
than this one. So if it's not this year, then when's it going to be?
Well, and I'll tell you what, yeah, I mean, this is a thing where, again, with the kind of season that Lamar Jackson had and the way that, again, the fact that they're practically going to Kelly Temp service right now at the running back position and not suffering
like
a drop.
I give you that. That was a good one.
Yeah. I mean, it just, you know, Dobbins goes down. Like, they just pluck in whoever, and it doesn't seem to hurt him at running back. So it's a thing where he deserves, and his legs are a good part of the reason on that, although I always feel that it's risky to rely as much on the quarterback to run as Baltimore and Buffalo do. But the other commonality is Lamar Jackson, it's a thing where you're right in terms of legacy. Because let me tell you something. If they go out and, I mean, look, if the Baltimore defense uncharacteristically lets up and they lose 49-45, nobody's going to be looking in Lamar's Jackson's direction. But the more likely scenario is, if they lose, it's not in a shootout. And let me tell you something. I'm calling it flat out. Lamar Jackson is going to be on the same level reputationally as Josh Allen if that happens.
Absolutely.
Everybody's sour on Josh Allen right now. Lamar Jackson is either going to ascend beyond that and be regarded as one of the top quarterbacks in the game full stop, or he's going to be on the Josh Allen level. And there's no in between, Ken.
And, you know, another thing, Rick, these guys are all getting at those ages, 5-6 years in the league, where at some point now we're going to, yeah, including Justin Herbert, by the way. I don't want to leave him out, even though he's not in the playoffs this year. At some point, you do have to go by your past record. You get what I'm saying? There's starting to be trends here. So, though I'd take either Jackson or
well, Allen.
Yeah. I'd take either one in a heartbeat. Don't get it misconstrued here. But if Lamar drops this one against Mahomes, there's going to be no dispute between the three of them who you're going to take first now.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, as far as Herbert goes, the only thing he proves is that it's possible to have reincarnation without death, because he's basically Dan Fouts 3.0. 2.0, yes, of course, was Phillip Rivers. I mean, the Chargers, it's nothing new, the fact that they have quarterbacks that put up gaudy stats and are basically ghosts in the postseason. I mean, that's the way it's always been. Again, this is the greatest punchline ever. Who's the only quarterback ever to take him to the Super Bowl? Stan Humphries.
I know.
Are you kidding me?
I know.
He's not a top five.
Humphries, don't you think that's a guy that's showing you where the tools are at Menards or something?
Yeah.
Like that?
I mean, look, when you factor in Jack Kemp and Gabriel, he's not even a top five quarterback in the franchise.
Jack Kemp.
Yeah.
You're going back. I like that one.
Old school. Well, hey, he was great at things other than supply side economics, brother. He was a heck of a quarterback in his own time. look at me reaching for that reference, huh?
Oh, my God.
You know, yeah. I mean, the only guy out of the bunch that, like, didn't do anything important statistically but got him to a Super Bowl, albeit in a down period for the AFC, but, you know, it was what it was. But,
and the piggyback real quick on Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
Now, I know he got hurt this year. I don't know what's going to happen as far. I don't even know who the head coach of the hired, whatever. The bottom line is, going into this next year, if he doesn't make the playoffs and maybe win at least one game, then he's going to be, he better, I don't know what to say about him neither.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not even sure he's on the level of Josh Allen reputationally now.
No, you can't. No.
Josh Allen at least chokes in the playoffs. I mean, Herbert's...
Well, he gets there at least.
Yeah. Justin Herbert, now, again, he did most memorably last year against Jacksonville, but that's sort of the exception to the rule. The whole thing, too, of like, oh, and Harbaugh's got to go there. Like, you know, here's the funny thing. People finally saw this year what I've been saying for years. The Chargers for years have been a Stars and Scrubs roster. And now that the season's over, now we're back to forgetting about that. Like, of course, Jim Harbaugh is going to go there because they have a great roster. No, they don't, man. There's going to be some rebuilding to be done.
They have a lot of names is what they have.
That's what it is, dude. People get hypnotized by names. Not guys like me and you, of course.
Right.
People get hypnotized by names. If you just look at the names, you think that they're a top five roster in the league. They're not in the top half of the league to me.
Well, I got one for you right now if you want to talk about the elephant in the room when it comes to the Chargers.
Sure.
Where's Joey Bosa at?
I mean, okay, again.
I haven't really, now look, I'm not watching the games like I used to, don't get me wrong, but I mean, do you ever really hear his name?
Well, I mean, here's the thing too. Great when healthy, but just like Derwin James. I mean, it's a thing where, you know.
Spot on, Rick.
You got to put asterisks on even their great players. And, you know, it's just one of those things where they don't have enough great players there. They've never been a team that's had depth. I laugh about this all the time doing podcasts in different sports. Like, it seems obligatory that, like, L.A. has to be a Stars and Scrubs team regardless of sports. Look at the Angels over the years. That's why Ohtani never did anything there. Look at the Chargers. The Lakers until the last year and a half or so, when it was basically just LeBron and AD for a period of time. They've beefed up a little bit since. The Dodgers are obviously immune to that because they sign everybody under the moon. But, you know, again, L.A., it's just a weird, weird thing across sports. And listen, maybe it's the thing of like chasing the headlines, because when you're a Stars and Scrubs team, people are always going to think you're better than you are, which is where the Chargers are, which is why the Chargers have not since, the 07 season been on Championship Sunday, nor will they be on Championship Sunday anytime soon. But it is always the Championship Sunday of discussions, my friend, whenever you and I get a chance to chop it up here. So,
well, before we get off, I have to bring up about Derwin James.
Yes.
He seems like the consummate guy the last 4 to 5 years where they're saying, oh, we're projecting him to be the next Sean Taylor.
Yeah.
And see, that's where Herbert's at right now. He's had a pivotal year. This is a very pivotal, in my eyes.
Well, yeah, and
that's now we can't keep blaming the GM or the coach or the offensive line or the defense. At some point, you know, you got to start making some stuff happen, period.
Well, and there's a term that I've used on the show a little bit over the course of time. I use it mostly for defensive players. I used it years ago for Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. He really didn't live up to it, although maybe briefly he did for Green Bay, sort of in the mid-2010s. But I think of Derwin James this way when he's healthy. Force multiplier. that like the epitome of a guy who's like so good that he makes those around him better because he commands attention and everything like that. And Derwin James at his best is that guy, but he has to be on the field consistently. And through the course of his career, that really hasn't been the case. He's been more of a tease relative to his upside than an achiever of it. And I say that might sound mean, but it's also a compliment because his upside is incredible. Like,
you know, another name that while you were talking about that comes to mind, same exact guy, maybe not the same skill set, but equal kind of guy is Jamal Adams.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, when the guy's on his game, he's on his game. He does make things, you know, but then he's hurt. Or he'll make that one play or two during the game.
Yeah.
What was he thinking?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, he's had a number of brain farts up there in Seattle, and that's what's made them regret the deal. No, you're right. You're right. And listen, force multipliers what they thought they were getting when they ponied up to the Jets that huge haul there. And again, guys like that, you know, we always talk here, and again, I'm sure you and I will be back doing this during draft season again. But again, those are the kind of guys you look for defensively. Those are your first round value guys. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of guys that up and down the line. And safety is one of those positions that kind of jumps out to me because when you have an impact safety, somebody like Sean Taylor and Urlacher, the ripple effect across the defense is substantial. That's one of those positions where a guy can really make a difference. And that's where, again, Derwin James is one of those guys when healthy. But again, everybody looks at the Chargers and they just see the best versions of the guys that are there instead of the actual versions. And they think there's more guys that are at that level than there are. So,
well, you know what I really think it is? I think they see that powder blue.
Yeah, they do. They do.
And it just hypnotizes them because those jerseys are awesome. I'm not going to lie.
They are. And I'll tell you what, and you gave me a great hook for bringing this thing all the way around. And here's what I'm about to say. I'm a guy that said, probably back in about 08 or so when the Lions, the absolute rock bottom of their franchise, when they lost an entire season worth of games, never mind that the Browns would do that subsequently, but at the time it was one of those things, and I'm a guy that's listened to some Detroit sports talk stations over a huge period of time because of being the ginormous Red Wings honk that I am. So I, of course, hear about other Detroit things when I'm on those stations. And always hearing about the Honolulu with silver and blue. And I might have even said it on the show. Like at the time, I'm like, I would get rid of the color scheme altogether because it represents decades of mediocrity and mediocrity at its best, bad football at its worst. So I will say this, Dan Campbell's not a guy I believed in coming in there because, I wasn't that impressed with him based on his previous stops. He's proved me wrong. And he and the front office have proved me wrong, believe it or not, on the color scheme. Because it's one of those things where I just thought that, like, how do you take something that is so synonymous with loserdom and turn it around? And that's one of those things where...
Did you just say loserdom?
Yes, basically. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, exactly. So, listen, I mean, and that might sound like a silly point to make, but it's like those colors have represented futility for so long. And that's where... What I was suggesting would have been the easy way out. You know, switch to like, you know, gold and orange or some crap like that. It would have been so much easier. Change your name from the Lions. You know, any of these other things would have been, but they have done it with the same legacy of the franchise, the same hapless legacy they've had over the last couple of decades, and it hasn't held them back. So props to them. Because the culture of an organization, the culture of losing is so hard to turn around. And win, lose, or draw, they deserve a lot of credit for that.
Well, breaking news. I don't know if we had that. I wish we had that little breaking news. While we're on the air, I'm not sure if you know, but I just happened to notice that Jim Harbaugh was just named Chargers head coach.
Really? Breaking news.
Okay. And OC Sharon Moore?
Yes.
Is expected to become named Wolverine's head coach.
Well, so. The only thing that I can say is that If everybody's expecting past performance, future results, let it be known that Luke Fickell was 1-0 against Michigan and didn't end up doing anything at Ohio State past that. So,
well, I will say this. I'm glad we were talking about Justin Herbert, because now, since they have the great Jim Harbaugh coming in, no more excuses, right?
Yeah, exactly. And Jim Harbaugh won't have to wear the shame of that championship getting wrenched away by the NCAA, vacated subsequently
you
here.
You best believe they're going to be, I think Michigan fans better be looking, well, the next 2 to 3 months, they're going to be coming down with some serious implications, put it that way.
Oh, they are. So I just find that absolutely hilarious. But thank you for breaking that here.
We can do a podcast on that one, huh?
We can, and I'm sure we probably will. But Scout, it is always a pleasure, my man. Thank you so much. It is always state-of-the-art football talk when we have you on. Can't thank you enough, buddy.
Well, the biggest compliment I can give you whenever I'm talking and speaking with you on air or off air is never work.
Yeah, that's true, man. That's true. We flowing out here. We flowed all the way through this. Listen, you and I had a very dispiriting talk on Ohio State football before this, and I told you, you're going to be feeling a lot better by the time we get done recording. I called my shot.
Trust me, I did a 360.
Yes.
I'm glad you got me out of that mindset. Yes.
Yes, I knew it would. Me and you recording together is the cure for any ills, and that is something that I know everybody is going to enjoy checking out. Thank you, everybody, for checking out mini episode 1705, and thank you, the Scout Ken Bex, my great friend from firstdownscouting.com. That is the number one, stdownscouting.com. Check it out. Talk to you soon, everybody.